RV, emisora virtual de la UNAD para la audiencia global en línea.
This is Inviloner, the academic radio show in English by UNAD, Instituto Virtual de Lenguas. Music, literature, culture, language learning, and more. Stay tuned.
Happy Halloween, guys! This is the month of spooky stories.
You mean horror movies?
Well, they are part of that, but don't get scared. I won't talk to you about horror stories at all. I know Silvana doesn't like watching horror movies.
But neither do I.
I guess all of us have heard about Colombia's traditional legends, like the very famous crying lady and many more.
Oh, I do remember reading about that weird lady. Many people say it's true, but I honestly doubt it.
I guess those stories came out of people's imagination, man.
Then let's listen to Cesar Garcia from Ciudad Pitalito. He will tell us everything related to such stories.
Hi there, guys in studio. We're in October, so have you ever heard about myths and legends? How are myths and legends transmitted? What do you think are myths and legends? What are the most important and famous myths in your culture? Are you scared when talking about fantastic beings? Well, Colombia has many traditions and folk tales and stories about legendary creatures which are transmitted orally and kept for next generations to come. Some of them are common with other Latin American countries. The Colombian folklore has strong influences from Spanish culture, with elements of African and Native American cultures. Some important Colombian myths are the Weeping Woman, or better known as La Llorona. It's a widespread legend in Mexico, Puerto Rico, and Central America. Although several variations exist, the basic story tells of a beautiful woman by the name of Maria killing her children by drowning them in order to be with the man that she loved. When the man rejects her, she kills herself. Scriba Mother, or better known as Madre Monte. The myth of Madre Monte, Scriba Mother, is a popular one amongst farmers and loggers, who generally refer to her for explanations of various natural and inexplicable events in the Andes Mountains. As legends goes, she's a burly, elegant lady dressed in flesh leaves and green moss. Regarded as a protector of nature and forest animals, she is unforgiving when humans enter her domain to alter or destroy them. One Foot, or better known as La Pata Sola. In the midst of the jungle sits a mystical woman who torments any unfaithful spouses who navigate the thickness of the Andes. Pata Sola, or One Foot, lures men by crying for help as a seductive and beautiful woman. Once the man is close, Pata Sola becomes a horrible one-legged woman with fiery eyes, a ferocious mouth lined with feline teeth, and a disheveled short strand of hair that falls over her face to hide her ugliness. See you there, guys!
Thanks, Cesar. That was really fantastic.
Kind of scary, too.
Oh, come on. Those are only stories.
You guys want to hear something spooky? Well, listen to this song.
Thank you. Cultura Geek, cultura pop, cómics, videojuegos y lo último en tecnología. Todo aquí en Código Fuente. Los lunes a las 3 de la tarde. Solo aquí en la Radio UNAD Virtual.
Have you ever read The Cask of Amontillado?
I don't remember. Who wrote it?
It was written by Edgar Allan Poe, one of Diana Quater's favorite writers.
For real?
Yeah, she definitely loves all of his stories.
But what's so particular about him?
I'd rather have Diana Quater from Ciudad Arbeláez tell us about it. I'm sure she'll be quite delighted to tell us.
Hello everybody, I hope you're doing well these creepy days. Today we are going to talk about a weird character. No other 19th century author is as omnipresent in today's pop culture. He has guest starred in an animated series South Park and The Simpsons. His face graces the cover of a Beatles album. He has fought crime alongside Batman in the comic series Batman Nevermore and hunted a serial killer in the film The Raven. With his short stories and poems, Edgar Allan Poe captured the imagination and interest of readers around the world. His creative talents led to the beginning of different literary genres, earning him the nickname Father of the Detective Story, among other distinctions. His life, however, has become a bit of mystery itself, and the lines between fact and fiction have been blurred substantially since his death. While editing Philadelphia's Graham's magazine, Poe published the first detective story, The Murder in the Rue Morgue, before the word detective entered the English language. Even before most urban police forces had detective on staff, Poe followed this with a series of precedent setting mysteries, including the first important treasure hunt mystery, the first comic detective story, the first locked room mystery, and the first detective story based on a true crime. Poe is best remembered today for his tales of psychological terror. He was acclaimed in his own day for his satires, mysteries, science fiction, literary criticism, and lyric poetry. Today, there is no writer of horror, science fiction, or mysteries who doesn't bear the mark of his influence. Nowadays, every Halloween season, Poe impersonators portray him at libraries, theaters, and graveyards around the globe. His legions of fans wear his instantly recognizable face on t-shirts, jewelry, and tattoos. But everybody has wondered why he wrote this type of stories. As he stated, some tales were produced from his imagination, as the Balloon Hoax. But also, other Poe's stories were connected with many events that happened in real life. For instance, the Oblong Box, Mr. Wyatt's travel by ship from Charleston to New York with his sister, a woman claiming to be his wife, and a large oblong box. He encounters an old college friend who is perplexed about the content of this mysterious object. When the ship sinks in a storm, Wyatt follows his box into the water rather than abandon it for the safety of the lifeboat. Only later does Wyatt's friends discover that the woman pretending to be Wyatt's wife was his servant, and that Wyatt's actual wife died before the journey and was being secretly transported in the box of preservative salt because the ship's crew was superstitious about having a corpse on board. 3 years before Poe published this gruesome tale, newspapers around the country covered the sensational case of John Colt, brother of the future revolver manufacturer Samuel Colt. In 1841, John Colt murdered the printer Samuel Adams over an unpaid bill, stuffed his body into a box of salt, and shipped it to New Orleans. When Adams' friends noticed his absence and alerted the police, it was only a matter of time before they found the box aboard the ship. The crew apparently mistook the stench of the decomposing cadaver for rat repellent. In order to come to an end about this writer, Poe was overcome by grief after the death of his beloved Virginia in 1847. While he continued to work, he suffered from poor health and struggled financially. His final days remain somewhat of a mystery. He left Richmond on September 27, 1849, and was supposedly on his way to Philadelphia. On October 3rd, Poe was found in Baltimore in great distress. He was taken to Washington College Hospital, where he died on October 7th. His last words were, "Lord, help my poor soul. At the time, it was said that Poe died of congestion of the brain, but his actual cause of death has been the subject of endless speculation. Some experts believe that alcoholism led to his demise, while others offer up alternative theories. Rabies, epilepsy, carbon monoxide poisoning are just some of the conditions thought to have led to the great writer's death. Okay, guys, we hope you have liked about this great writer in Halloween, but don't be scared. Bye.
Wow, that was amazing.
I checked that out. It actually sounds quite interesting.
But why don't we listen to the story?
That'd be fun.
The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. Read by Chris Scorringe. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, "tapping at my chamber door. Only this, and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember, it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow, vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, nameless here for evermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, "'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more." Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. "Sir," said I, "or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you." Here I opened wide the door. Darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, "Lenore." This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, "Lenore." Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping, somewhat louder than before. "Surely," said I, "surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind, and nothing more." Open here I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not an instant stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord and lady perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas just above my chamber door, perched and sat and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. "Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou," I said, "art sure no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is in the night's plutonium shore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." Much I marvelled this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing a bird above his chamber door, bird or beast upon the sculptured bust above his chamber door, with such a name as Nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on that placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further then he uttered, not a feather then he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, "Other friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before." Then the bird said, "Nevermore." Startled at the stillness, broken by reply so aptly spoken, "Doubtless," said I, "what it utters is its only stock and store, caught from some unhappy master, whom unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster, till his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope the melancholy burden bore of never, nevermore." But the raven, still beguiling all my sad soul into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking, what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking nevermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er, but whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloated o'er, she shall press, ah, nevermore. Then, methought, the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer, swung by seraphim whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. "Wretch," I cried, "thy God hath lent thee, by these angels he hath sent thee, respite, respite, and nepenthe from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, O quaff, this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." "Prophet," said I, "thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, whether tempter sent or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate, yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." "Prophet," said I, "thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden it shall clasp a saintly maiden whom the angels name Lenore, clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." "Be that word our sign of parting, bird or fiend," I shrieked, upstarting, "get thee back into the tempest and the night's plutonium shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken, quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting, still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul, from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore.
Vidaonanista, un programa liderado por la Vicerrectoría de Servicios Aspirantes, Estudiantes Egresados VISAE, producido por Bienestar Institucional, a través del cual invitados especiales hablarán acerca de temas de interés de la vida universitaria. Escúchanos todos los miércoles a partir de las 10 de la mañana. Te esperamos.
Do you know where Halloween came from?
I have no idea about it, but it'd be nice to learn, though.
Well, guys, let me start by telling you that due to the proximity of Halloween celebration, I'm gonna be talking about this date that has become really important nowadays.
Grant, what do you have to tell us?
Well, I've done some research because I wanted to know in a deeper way why we celebrate Halloween and where all of these costumes and disguises came from. I got some valuable information related to that topic, among others, History Channel.
I've heard about really nice shows in that channel. What did you watch?
Did you know that Halloween comes from the transformation of the words Hallow and Eve?
I had no idea.
Yeah, that's right. I'm gonna tell you more about that later. And did you know that this celebration is the second which produces more incomes for business?
No way.
Guess which is in the first place. I bet you have it in mind.
Yeah, Tomorrowland, New Year's Eve.
No, man. Any of those. It's Christmas.
Now, we are more interested in what you are saying. Come on and start sharing some information.
Okay. Well, all of this started 2,000 years ago. There was a festival called Samhain in the Gaelic region. This is in the Northern Europe. And it was celebrated on November 1st. But the night before, they had the Samhain Eve. And people thought that the spirits of the dead returned as ghosts. So, in order to not bother them, they left fruits, wine, and different things at the door. And if they would go out, they disguised as one ghost in order to not be confused and be seen as a fellow one.
Wow, how scary would that be?
Oh, come on, you know that ghosts don't exist. So I guess it was people around who took advantage of the situation and got all the stuff, because at the end of the night when they would wake up, nothing appeared at the front door.
Certainly you are.
Continuing with what I researched, the Catholic Church turned Samhain into All Saints' Day or All Hallows' Day back in the 8th century. Then, the night before became All Hallows Eve, which were transformed as Halloween with time.
Oh, what about the famous expression called trick or treat? What can you tell us about it?
Well, before it was more from the trick and was more about pranks and hijacks to houses. Imagine getting eggs, mud, toilet paper all around your house. Thanks God it is over.
I can't imagine the problems people had before with the celebration.
Yeah, I don't want even to imagine.
But this guy's thing just came along in the 1950s. And the whole celebration just got kid-centered. And everything was related to them.
There are always gonna be children in the world, so what a great business.
Well, making ourselves in contest, let's listen to this really, really freaky song that I hope it puts your chicken skin.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Esto es RV, Radio UNAD Virtual.